Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good Wednesday morning to you. It is Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. The Super Bowl ratings numbers are in. It's one of the lowest watched Super Bowls. 96.4 million viewers across all platforms. That is very low. That's usually in the nine figures. It's usually well over 100, maybe 115, 120 million. This is one of the lowest Super Bowls since 2007. You know, you'll hear a lot of reasons why. You'll see it blended into the political realm. You'll see a lot of it about Tom Brady fatigue. I don't know. I'm actually surprised. I was surprised with all the ratings in sports across the platforms this year. We saw it down in the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball. We saw it all plummet. I did not think this Super Bowl was going to be... of all the things it is going to be remembered for, and this is not going to be on the, you know, this is probably something that's going to be forgotten in a couple of months anyway. But I didn't think one of the things that is going to be brought about with this Super Bowl is that it was one of the lowest watched. I thought the Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady story was interesting, even if Brady's love affair with the American public was not there. I thought Patrick Mahomes was building up something that people wanted to catch. But I am a little surprised by this. I thought, you know, the NFL is not immune to some of the political detractors. It certainly hasn't. We've seen ratings go down over the last couple of years. People have been pointing this out. But to see this number, it was a little eye-opening to me to see a number like 96 million, especially, again, and I'm not saying this Brady is a likable guy. I still think most of Americans were getting sick of Brady constantly going to the Super Bowl, but this was going to be different. This Super Bowl was not another trip to the Super Bowl with Brady and the Patriots. It was him with a new team, and he was going up against a team and a quarterback in general that is a very likable guy in Patrick Mahomes. He's got a good Q rating, as we say in the business. I mean, people genuinely like him. Like, they may not like the fact that he beats their football team, but he's a very likable quarterback. And I thought that this was going to be the one Super Bowl that people could say, you know what, I'm tired of the Patriots, I'm tired of Brady, but I'll watch this one because it is Brady against Mahomes, but the numbers show otherwise. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. And we'll also talk to Steve Gardner at USA Today on Major League Baseball as that gets started next week.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, we've reached the midweek point, Aaron, on Wednesday, and we have reached the point with the good, the bad, and the dumb. What is the good of the day, Ron Culver?
The good of the day is that technology can sometimes be really difficult.
Okay. Yes, it can.
Right? But yes. However, it does give us gems, such as Lawyer Cat.
Lawyer Cat.
Now, this video went viral yesterday, and I'll set it up for you, and then I will play the video for you because it's fantastic. But it's like the 39th District hearing or something like that. I'm not really too sure. Sorry, I don't know the details on that. But basically, it was a Zoom call, and you know, lawyers are meeting in front of a judge, and they're just trying to resolve their issues. Unfortunately, one of the lawyers had a filter on his Zoom.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And so it made him appear as a cat that was talking.
And that must have been great.
Well, just have a listen.
Okay. I can't hear that.
Oh, you know what helps out sometimes? Is when I actually pot it up. Because I'm sitting here listening to it laughing.
Wonderful.
Man, that's great radio right there.
Right.
I'm just moving that to the dumb of the day. Anyways, right. Here's Lawyer Cat.
Mr. Ponton, I believe you have a filter turned on in the video settings. You might want to
Can you hear me, Judge?
I can hear you. I think it's a filter.
It is, and I don't know how to remove it. I've got my assistant here. She's trying to, but I'm prepared to go forward with it. I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
In case you were wondering, that's not me.
I can see that. I think if you click the up arrow next to this.
No, this is too much. This is too much. This is every conversation that you hear.
This is, you know what this is? This is a offshoot of that those Progressive commercials.
Oh, this is completely, this is, people have no idea how this works. And yeah, but you know what? I laugh, but this is me in a couple of years when the new stuff comes barreling
through.
This is me. I swear, this is me. Right? It's, I don't know.
I just love that line. I'm live. I'm not a cat.
I'm not a cat, in case you're wondering.
In case you're wondering, Judge.
I like it when he goes, you have a filter on. He goes, I know my assistant's trying to, like, I don't have any idea what I'm doing.
I don't even know how we got to this place.
Oh. These kind of things. I was on a Zoom chat last night, and I wanted so badly. The guy that I was listening to was kind of, you know, he was good, but he was having some boring stretches. And I wanted to go look up some stuff or, you know, look up scores or something while it was gone.
Yeah.
And I was afraid to, because I was afraid somebody was going to go, yeah, Tony, we get it. South Carolina is trailing by 3.
Yep.
Right? And I was like, did I have share screen on? I'm sorry. Because but that's me in a couple years.
I'm such a novice. I know how to get on a Zoom call, and I just know how to do it. The other day, I had to do. I did one with my brother and his my sister-in-law, because they're having a baby, so they did a bridal Zoom call. And the only problem I had was I kept seeing all my family members. I'm like, how do I just? Can I push this and just talk to them directly?
Yeah.
I just want to talk to the, I just want to say, hey, what's going on? I haven't seen my, you know, my cousins or an aunt and uncle. I haven't seen them in a while. I just want to say, hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Amazing.
If I was at a party, I could do that.
I was on a golf course once and my phone called 911 because I was playing around with it too much.
Or and was I, it that had, you were that bad at golf that day? No.
I had to convince the person on the other end that nothing was wrong. Like I accidentally called them by pressing a variety of different side buttons on my phone.
Yeah.
And she still sent somebody to the golf course to make sure I was okay. Of course she did. She's not going to just take my word for it.
I mean,
I could be kidnapped or something.
No, she wanted to say, can you put the girl on, Tony?
Right. So I explained, you know, this is my phone. And so when I told my daughter this, she goes, yeah, you're not supposed to do that, Dad. It's this and this. I go, I know, but
I know that now.
I was just trying to do something, and next thing I know, I'm dialing 911. I didn't know it did that.
All right, is this a urban legend, or is this still true? Because I'm always afraid, because, you know, sometimes we'll let my we have, like, an old iPhone, you know, one of those old iPhones you paid for, but, you know, it's out of service.
Right.
Right, and I'll let my 4-year-old use it because, you know, we put some games on there, and he's able to play these games on the phone when we're, you know, long drives to and from baseball tournaments. And I'm always, but there's that thing up there saying, even though the phone is dead and has no SIM card, it can still call 911. Can it?
I don't know. See?
That worries me because I'm going to be driving down the road, and I'm going to all of a sudden have a cop in my rearview mirror.
Thinking you kidnapped your kids.
Kidnapped my kid. I'm like,
exactly.
Hey, trust me. He looks exactly like me. I didn't kidnap this one.
We're heading to those two gentlemen in that video.
We are.
What's the bad of the day?
O.J. Simpson making sense again.
Oh, O.J. Simpson is okay.
Yeah,
good,
he took to Twitter world to talk about how, you know, we got to transition from football, which means we now need to talk politics. Now, there's the first part of the video, which is very, very funny, and I'm going to play that for you because you and I will have a lot of fun with it. The second part of the video is a symphony because he does make a lot of sense in saying that, you know, it doesn't really matter with this impeachment trial going on, because these guys are just going to pander to their constituents no matter what, because they want to get voted. And then he was able to marry that into some thoughtful sentiments about Marty Schottenheimer. It's a thing of beauty.
So he did the politics and then the Marty Schottenheimer
all
tribute
in one video. But the first 15 seconds of this is absolutely O.J. Simpson gold. Here you go.
Hey, Twitter world, it's me, yours truly. Well, football is done, so now we're on to politics, and the second impeachment trial of the Donald gets started today. Now, unfortunately, I've been involved in a few jury trials and.
OJ. OJ.
Yeah, that's OJ. All you need to know.
This guy is something else, isn't he?
He is. I mean, he's a legend. He is an absolute legend.
Let's just make it clear. This guy chuckled at his involvement in a jury trial involving the murder of his ex-wife and another guy.
He's been involved in a couple jury trials.
Couple jury trials involving the death and murder of his ex-wife and another guy.
And what I love about it is the way he's doing is like, you may or may not know that I've been involved in a few jury trials.
Right.
I'm just letting you know I have been. Just in case you were living under a rock or not yet born in 94.
In case you're like 22, I've actually been in front of a jury or two.
One
just in case you didn't know.
One didn't convict me, but the other one did.
Maybe your parents didn't tell you. I was once a football player, but that was so long ago, they probably remember me being in a jury. In front of a jury.
Yeah.
For murder.
Some even label it the trial of the century.
Some think it was a big deal. I didn't, but it's a big deal, I guess. OJ, come on, man. Just setting yourself up for this.
That little chuckle.
Right?
It's fantastic. Like, I've been involved in some jury trials.
Yeah, you might remember. Those were fun. OJ. OJ's amazing.
Never change, OJ.
Never change, OJ. Enjoy Twitter world.
Yep.
All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is the Washington Post batting 1,000 this week. Okay. First, they reminded us that the Buccaneers is a celebration of pirate culture when, in fact, we probably shouldn't be romanticizing that culture.
You're probably not, right?
They went on to give us a little brief history of when the Buccaneers were named and that, during the 17th and 18th century, that area of Florida was, there were pirates there. But we probably shouldn't romanticize pirates.
Make sure you eat your oranges and don't get scurvy. Right.
And then yesterday they took one final shot at Marty Schottenheimer with this headline. Marty Schottenheimer, NFL coach whose team wilted in the postseason, dies at 77.
Oh, see, they took a shot at him already?
Took a shot, one final shot in the headline.
Let's talk about Marty Schottenheimer coming up because he passed away yesterday. Is it fair when somebody like that dies, how soon can you go to the really didn't do anything in the postseason kind of thing? Because I saw that a lot yesterday.
Yeah.
Like 200 regular season wins, and they were like, yeah, but he didn't do anything in the playoffs. I'm like, can you let this story just chill for a second before we start talking about some of his failures as a coach?
Can we just honor the man for what he was, which was a really great coach?
Right, exactly. Like, slow down a little bit.
Yeah, but the Washington Post had to be the first one out of the gate to go, hey, couldn't do anything in the postseason.
Nope, couldn't do anything in the postseason. Exactly. My goodness. Yeah, that is dumb. You're absolutely right. All right, that is the good, the bad, and the dumb. Coming up, we'll talk about Marty Schottenheimer, who again passed away yesterday. It's a remarkable career, as we talked about. Not so much postseason, but regular season. Marty Ball was something else. We'll talk about that when we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, is your check engine light on? Don't ignore it. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Let their professional parts people scan your vehicle for free. They'll retrieve the codes, discuss possible solutions, and even help you find a professional technician if needed. They'll help you find a reputable repair facility or service center near you. You can visit O'ReillyAuto.com, click on Find a Repair Shop. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So as we mentioned in the good, the bad, and the dumb, Marty Schottenheimer passed away at the age of 77, and I was a little disappointed in some media outlets going right to and he didn't win a lot in the playoffs at all. Like, he had won over 200 regular season games. And I know that's always going to be a narrative with Marty Schottenheimer. He had so much success, and it never translated to the postseason. But, when you think about his career, like, when you think about the 80s, for example, when he was the head coach in Cleveland, I know it's hard because if you've kind of grown up in the last, 20 years or so, the Browns were you know, Bill Belichick had the Browns in the playoffs, and then they moved to Baltimore, and then in 99 we've got this new incarnation of the Browns, and they pretty much have been awful for 20-plus years until this recent season.
And they've had, 30 head coaches?
Right, forever and a day. But the 80s Browns of Bernie Kosar and Marty Schottenheimer, that was a very dangerous and good football team.
Yeah,
that's the team of the drive and the fumble, Ernest Biner, and then John Elway on that long drive. They were scary good. I mean, they were really good Browns football teams led by Marty Schottenheimer. And in his last year was in San Diego with that 14-2 team.
Yeah.
That lost.
I still scratch my head on that.
I still do too. I mean, that game against the Patriots where they lost in the postseason, they made a lot of mistakes, but it's still mind boggling that they could turn that into something because they were so good during the regular season.
It was a fantastic team. I mean, those years, the Schottenheimer years, were fantastic, and the whole reasoning of him being dismissed was just because he wasn't getting along with ownership. Ownership wanted, you know, the Spanoses wanted a more of a yes man, and Schottenheimer wasn't going to be that. Schottenheimer was going to say, "No, I'm going to do it my way, and it's always going to be my way." And he proven that he had been a successful head coach doing it his way.
Yeah, I mean, Parcells talked about this in that famous line. He said, "When you're asked to cook the meal, you should be able to shop for the groceries, right?"
Yeah.
There's a coaching element. There's like an attitude, like a type, right? That says, "Look, if you hire me, then you are hiring me, and let me do what I do. And if you don't like it, you can fire me." But you better let me do everything I want to do here. If that's what you're doing, if you're entrusting me with the end goal of winning, I can do that. But here's how I do it. And that was Schottenheimer, right? Because it didn't work out in Washington for the same reason, right? Where he got fired because he didn't get along with the ownership there either. He went 8-8. Didn't get along with the ownership there. He had a stop in Kansas City. That was 10 years. He coached Montana. He was Montana's coach when Montana arrived in Kansas City. They went to the AFC Championship game and lost to Buffalo. So he had this incredibly remarkable career, but being true to himself, he didn't read the tea leaves of saying, "Well, I better change who I am and in order to stay relevant or stay employed in this league of owners that want to make sure that I'm on a certain level of the pecking order." Right? He just went, "Nope, this is what I do. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. And if we don't get along, I don't have to get along with you. I don't even have to talk to the general manager if I don't want to." Right? And, that's what he was. That's what he did.
And another thing to his career, which I'm kind of on the fence about, I don't know which way I should lean, is he a Hall of Fame coach or not?
Yeah, that's interesting because we do in the end, what are you? I mean, is it 200 career wins, regular season wins, or do we want to see some hardware at the end of it?
Like, apparently with him, we want to see hardware.
Yeah, we do.
Because he never even made it to the Super Bowl.
No.
But I can't think. I mean, if you think about, you know, coaches, especially during that era, name others during that time.
I mean, 200 wins is a lot of wins.
It's a lot of wins
to not get to the Super Bowl. At least if he had gotten a one or two and lost both of them, then it's a no-brainer. But you're right, we want hardware, and it's unfortunate. You know, it's funny, we don't necessarily equate that to players, right? We talk about Philip Rivers going to the Hall of Fame, or, you know, obviously Dan Marino had the numbers and that was a no-brainer, but with coaches, that's really what
that's
you're
your
there
benchmark.
For that's your benchmark, that's why you're hired, that's why you're there. You can be a fantastic player and have elements around you that didn't work out that's on the coach and the GM. But a coach is expected to bring home some bacon. And if you don't bring home any bacon, it is hard to properly evaluate. Look, it's as I was saying in The Good, the Bad, and the Dumb, I thought it was way too quick how many people on Twitter and articles and what just made this point almost immediately. Like, the guy just passed away, 77. He is an NFL, well-known NFL personality coach. Like if you've been around this league a long time, you know the name. It's easily recognizable. And his passing didn't even allow a chance to sort of breathe in the news cycle, right? This is sad. Prayers to his family, etc. Instead, it went to, 200 wins, no Super Bowls, and didn't do much in the postseason. Like, that's kind of sad, you know, because it was... Because, listen, as a Steeler fan growing up in the 80s, those Browns teams were scary. I mean, really scary. And the Steelers in the 80s were not a really good team. They'd have some moments where they put some things together, but
those 80s belong, the late 80s especially, belong to Cleveland. That division belonged to Cleveland. And Houston, too. Houston would be in that mix as well back in the day. But I remember sweating out those games against the Browns in those early years. So, yeah, rest in peace, Marty Schottenheimer. It's just, it was, you know, like I said, it was just weird to see the analysis of a guy's career so quick.
Yeah.
I mean, I got the news and it was like already.
And that's always been the narrative of him. It's like, you know, hey, great regular season coaches couldn't do anything in the postseason.
Yeah.
And that ultimately was, you know, one of the reasons why, I mean, I guess it was the fall guy reason, if you will, to the reason to why he got fired with the Chargers. But, I mean, the real reason was just that he wasn't getting along with ownership. And,
yeah, there's politics behind the scenes, right? Yeah.
But exactly. It was like, oh, he can't win in the postseason because here we have a 14-2 team, and they're out once again.
They're out once again, right. Steve Gardner, USA Today, is going to join us in 8 minutes. We'll talk to him about the upcoming season and all of the things that 2021 is going to bring to Major League Baseball. We'll have that conversation for you in just a bit. This Dak Prescott left out of the hype video story is hilarious to me. am I the only one that finds this hysterical?
No, Tony, it's just an oversight.
I mean, it is the funniest story that the Cowboys video and production staff put together a hype video for the upcoming season and did not put Dak Prescott in it at all.
Well, it was all defense, right? It was just a defense hype video?
No.
I mean, was Ezekiel Elliott featured? Amari Cooper? They weren't featured, right?
And now, they were completely left out. It's amazing to me.
Was CeeDee Lamb in there?
Yeah. It's amazing. And then the Cowboys go, yeah, that was an oversight, like you mentioned. And nobody's buying this at all.
Okay, if you left out maybe a star linebacker, an up-and-coming cornerback, right. Sure. But the quarterback is the face of the team. We can name all 32 starting quarterbacks right now.
Exactly.
You don't overlook your quarterback.
And so, to me, some people are saying this isn't a big deal. No, it is a big deal. I'm sorry.
If you're
Dak Prescott, this is a deal. It's not out of bounds for Prescott to say to the Cowboys, can you just give me an explanation for this? Like, literally. While we're trying to negotiate a long-term deal and I'm trying to recover from this devastating injury to come back and give you some wins in a crappy division, can you explain this? Like, I'm not trying to say it bothered me, but it bothered me.
You know, a better spin job would have been like, yeah, well, we took a lot of raw video from the 2020 season.
Sure.
I'm curious, is Andy Dalton featured in this video?
Yeah, right? Exactly. What about the kid Ben DiNucci. Yeah. Is Ben DiNucci in the video?
Of course he is.
Right? Is Ben DiNucci in the video getting sacked and throwing interceptions out of bounds?
DiNucci makes a film.
That's right. DiNucci. Ben DiNucci. He's I'm never going to forget him now. Never. Never. Seriously, like this is, you feel like this is a huge blunder. Why couldn't you, let's say you're the Cowboys and you were being nefarious about it. You're like, well, we're not really sure we're going to work out a deal with Dak Prescott. Wouldn't you just make a hype video just to cover your tracks on that? To me, if this wasn't a mistake, which I don't believe it was, you know that people have got some splaining to do. Let me make this clear. There was a picture on Twitter of Tony Romo at the Super Bowl where somebody noticed that his pants were wet and wondered if he peed himself. Like, that's the kind of sleuthing that goes on in this world. Like, that's the insane level people will put into pictures, video, whatever, right? Like, you get a picture and they're like, what's this little dot right here? What's this? What's that? Oh, it looks like... Like, people are noticing things in the background on Zoom calls, on television programs, and what kind of books people are reading, and what kind of things are on the shelves that shouldn't be on the shelves, all sorts of things. And you put out a video knowing it's going to be dissected by everybody in the sports world that doesn't include Dak Prescott, and you thought no one was going to ask you about it? Did you think nobody was going to say, what does this mean? And if it seriously was an oversight, the idea that this thing was done in the Cowboys organization, how many people saw this thing before it was set out and not one person went, Dak Prescott doesn't seem to be in this, guys. And you could have some young video guys going, oh, yeah, you know what?
No, apparently there was no editing involved. It was just, you know, we're just going to release it and just go with it.
Go with it, yeah. Just be done. Put it out there. It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
If I'm Dak Prescott, I seriously don't want to seem petty,
But I absolutely want to know what the heck is up with this.
Yeah. He was in the last year's version.
Yeah. No doubt.
Why not just back when, some of that
back
footage?
When the relationship was cooler, I guess. I don't know. Steve Gardner next. We'll talk some Major League Baseball as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, pitchers and catchers scheduled to report next week, and one of my favorite guys to talk to about that and all things baseball, Steve Gardner, USA Today, on a Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you, Tony?
Good, man. Appreciate it. Let's go into the 2021 season with what we left off with in 2020. So we've got a full schedule, but some of the things from last year are going to be in place in 2021 in terms of guy on second, seven-inning doubleheaders. What are some other things that we know that the 2021 season is going to consist of?
Well, those are the big ones. And the one thing, we will see all the protocols. In fact, they'll be even stricter for the players to keep them from intermingling with other people that could possibly still be carrying the virus, because, you know, MLB doesn't want the players to jump the line in terms of getting vaccines. So you've got to be very, very careful. Those are pretty much the things that are going to remain the same. What we won't have will be the universal DH. At least we still won't have it as of this point. I guess the Players Association and MLB could reach another agreement, but that doesn't look as likely anymore now that we've gotten the original protocols in there, and they still remain, you know, essentially at a stalemate on that and the expanded playoffs.
Give us an idea on the universal DH. I get it why the union would want it. It is good for some of their players. It expands a guy's marketability, if you will. He would have 30 teams to compete for his services if he was a DH rather than 15 in the American League. Why is the owners holding off on that?
Well, the owners want to get something back from the Players Association. You know, this is the eternal give and take and push and pull between the two sides. And with the collective bargaining agreement expiring at the end of this season, it's seen as something big that the players would really like. And to do that, if the owners were to give the DH, you know, as a universal DH, which they're expected to do, and I think both sides want, they want something back. And right now, what they have tied to that DH is an expanded playoff system where they make the bulk of the money. And the players, I think, are seeing that. And that's why they're, you know, kind of reluctant to give perhaps one of their biggest bargaining chips going into next winter, when we're going to have the real negotiations, you know, when we may be knocked down and drag out and things could really get bitter.
What do we know about ticket sales and fan accessibility to games? I know in some states they won't be going at all. Some states may be a little open. Is Major League Baseball allowing each different franchise to work within their own local government, or is it universal that it stays the same for everybody?
No, I think that they will take it on a city-by-city basis. You know, one thing that is different from last year is that we will have a full schedule as opposed to just the Central Division teams playing the Central Division teams. So that's going to be a change. I think from a safety standpoint, fans will need to be limited. We've already seen, you know, with the Super Bowl and all these other sporting events that are outside, where limited fans, you know, fans are allowed on a limited basis. And I think what we will see once the season starts is, you know, kind of that percentage of capacity, 20% or 25% or something like that at Major League stadiums, because, you know, that's where teams, again, make money, and they want to be able to do that, but we want to be able to do that safely. And I think that's where we will see. I don't think we will see fans to any degree at spring training games, partly because Florida and Arizona are some of the states with the highest COVID infection rates. And that's where they're having problems there. And, you know, that was one of the reasons why they wanted to delay spring training for a month so that they'd have a chance to, you know, get more people infected and possibly have, or more people vaccinated and possibly have, you know, fans in the stands there.
Ron and I were discussing about this. I mean, last year we kind of understood that, you know, 60 games, obviously they wanted to get it going as sports was being shut down and kind of being brought back. And then there was the economic question that sort of hung around baseball before we even got started. 162 games, limited fans, some places no fans, everyone getting a full their full checks. I know it's hard with baseball. They don't exactly open up their books to everybody. But it does make you wonder: are they capable of doing this without that avenue, without revenue stream?
Well, I think one of the things we've seen this certainly in the off season and to an extent last year, where Major League Baseball teams were cutting positions, cutting staff, you know, front office people, stadium workers. You know, they're not going to have to pay, so that's a less of an expense. But cutting scouts, coaching staffs, things like that. I mean, the teams are in cutback mode already, and they're trying to prepare for this. I still think that the revenues from, you know, broadcasting and sponsorships and things like that, which will continue to go on as they did, you know, as they always have.
Sure.
I think those still provide a decent revenue stream, and plus a lot of the teams, you know, they've made the franchise values have risen geometrically over the past decade and more, you know, for teams that have owned it longer, that really, when it comes down to the actual finances, those teams can take a downturn in revenues a lot easier than they're making out in public. And I think that's one of the things, especially because so many teams have their tentacles in other things like real estate near the stadium and things like that. So I think MLB teams are fine. The owners are still millionaires, multimillionaires and billionaires. So the industry will survive, but the downturn in revenue is something that is real.
I'll get to some player stories coming up in a bit. One more on this. The minor league baseball system, where are we? And if we don't have one, how will they navigate a full season of not having that place to go for players for whatever reason they go there?
Yeah, and that's another area that I didn't mention earlier in terms of cost cutting. You know, we had 44 minor league teams axed out of the system from previous years, and the minor leagues restructured. This is another question. I mean, we did not have a minor league season last year. So, Major League Baseball wants to be able to have more control over those minor league teams. And, I think the minor league season probably going to start later this year. And they're going to face a lot of the same issues that the majors are, but without the support, you know, without the money for testing and all that sort of stuff. It's really going to stretch the minor league system. And I think this is a concern that maybe is not getting as much attention because you need to have somewhere for those young players to play.
Yeah.
And the off-site training centers last year, the alternate training sites were okay, but you're not getting player development. You're not getting game action. And things like that, that these minor league players need to learn and need to experience. And, again, I think that certainly hurts the product.
Yeah, I think in a couple of years it's going to be interesting to look back to see which minor league players were hurt who lost a career, who lost so many years that they could never get back, and maybe a potential major league career was sort of derailed because of COVID-19.
Yeah, and you think of some of the players. I think of one, Joe Adele for the Angels, you know, who's really highly thought of, very high on a lot of prospect lists, came up last year at the age of 21 and really struggled. I mean, terribly on offense, defensively, and everything. You wonder if guys like that maybe were pushed a little bit too soon, what that does on their career development path. You know, does that stunt them? What does that do? I think that's a definite question that we'll need to look at a few years down the road.
The big player movement, one of the big player movements was Nolan Arenado going to St. Louis, traded by the Rockies. I understood that Nolan Arenado had problems with Rocky's management. It was an ongoing saga there. But what does that say about the Rockies organization, and especially a trade like this of this kind of magnitude? This is a major player that they sent away.
Yeah, and you could see when you have a player who's your franchise cornerstone that you sign to an extension to his contract in, you know, a couple hundred million dollars. And then less than a year later, he's not happy, and you trade him for, really, I think from all indications, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Right.
That just does not compute, especially, you know, if you're trying to run a franchise that you want to win a championship. And I think this is another one of those situations where, yeah, you can get a new general manager. You know, a lot of the moves that Colorado has made under Jeff Breidich have been horrible moves. So, you can get a new general manager whenever you want. You can't get a new player like Nolan Arenado. And to have him, you know, be upset almost from the start when the team doesn't build around him after he signed to be there for, you know, the next 7 or 8 years or whatever, however the length of the contract was, and you start making your star feel unwelcome, you're doing it wrong. And I think the St. Louis Cardinals stepped in and took advantage of that to the fullest extent. And now they have to be considered, you know, favorites in the National League Central.
And we're seeing, we also talk about Cleveland had the same issue with Francisco Lindor. He's now a Met. What do you make of the Mets under Steve Cohen, a kind of a new owner and a new attitude?
Yeah, I like the attitude, you know, and the desire to think big and make those big trades. As it turned out, you know, they did not compete, or they did compete, but did not land the biggest free agent, like in Trevor Bauer. They didn't land JT Realmuto. You know, they settled is not a great word for James McCann, but he was not the most desired catcher on the market. So, you know, they didn't go out and make the big free agent signing, but they were creative in accepting the contracts of Carlos Carrasco, who will help them maybe as much as Francisco Lindor. And Francisco Lindor, who, you know, as you said, only has 1 year left on his contract and could become a free agent. They're taking a big risk there, giving up what they did to get Lindor. They're hoping that he likes it there and will re-sign, because if he doesn't, that's a big loss for the Mets.
Yeah, and one of the things that is exciting if you're a Mets fan is a billionaire who's a fan of the team and he's willing to spend money. I can't imagine a better scenario than that.
Yeah, you're talking on one hand what Colorado was doing in terms of, oh no, you know, now we're on the hook for this huge contract.
Right.
We need to get rid of that quickly, and thinking of the financial impact versus, you know, the Mets on the other hand that are thinking, hey, we're going to build our team and get better and compete for a championship. You know, Steve Cohen said, I want to win a championship here and I want to win soon. And I think one of the other things too, Tony, is that the Mets added to their depth with some of the secondary signings. That was one of the areas where the Mets were really, really weak in previous years under the Wilpon ownership, because they didn't want to spend, you know, the $1 million for a backup shortstop.
Right, right.
That's where I think we'll see a major difference in how these Mets under Steve Cohen approach things and the previous previous regime.
We love having you on, Steve. I can't wait till the season starts and we get you on more. Appreciate your time, my friend, as always.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Tony.
Steve Gardner, USA Today Baseball, as we continue along on our Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at Progressive.com, as we continue with Wake Up Call and Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us as we continue along with Wake Up Call. Jake Asman Show is coming up next. This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Ready for a new home? Rocket can. I don't want to end the show on a downer, because, you know, Jake's show is coming up and we should be uplifting as we lead into his show, but when I was doing that interview with Steve Gardner, it did hit me how many minor league baseball players are like, this is it. I got where am I going to go?
Yeah. What are you going
to
do?
My whole life I've been gearing to be a baseball player, and now I've made it to this organization's AA system, right? And I lost a year of playing last year, and I'm going to lose another year. Who knows when I'll get back? And where's my window? Am I going to be able to overcome this? Like, am I going to like, those 2 years could have been essential to my development as a potential pro, or a major leaguer.
Or maybe you're, and I can't remember the character's name. It was Tom Bergeron's character in.
Oh yeah, right.
You know, in Major League.
Major League, right?
Where it was, that was his final shot.
Yeah,
To get back to the majors.
Exactly, and there's
those guys are out there. It's their final chance to maybe make it, or get that call up.
Those guys who were like 28, 27 at the pen, and like, I might have a 2 year shot at this. I could. And then here comes the pandemic and their season is done and done.
I mean, I guess maybe international.
Yeah, I guess if you can figure out a way to do that.
I know.
Like, I mean, our own favorite Tim Tebow's baseball career was shut down because of the coronavirus.
Yeah, don't remind us.
I mean, I was begging by the way, Steve Cohen probably will never bring the Mets on, would never have brought Tim Tebow on board.
Like, we don't know that,
like,
Tony.
We kept joking.
We don't know that.
There's one organization that'll be like, screw it. Just give Tim Tebow a major league at bat. It would have been the Mets.
It would have been the Wilpons.
Right? It would have been the Wilpons. Steve Cohen's like, no, we're not gimmicky anymore. No.
We're
stop
be
making
serious.
Fun of us. Right?
We don't want to be the second club in New York.
No, we're not doing, we're not hiring, a circus clown to play center field. Or anything silly like that. No. Right, that's what he's doing. So our dream came to a crashing halt due to COVID and an ownership change with the Mets.
Damn you, COVID!
All right, Jake Asman Show's coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow. Wake up call, Sports Map Radio.